So much.
Thank you.
You never know.
Yeah, absolutely. A little mouse hungry. No,
No. If the judge
maybe
eats it, I'm gonna tell
I'm
it
going
to
to take it into my office. Yeah.
I think he sits in my chair because his plaque was here. I'll step in behind me.
Judge Tony
No,
has.
he fits right here. I come in, I see.
I've seen it when I moved in.
Yeah. I put it down here on the item.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome all of you to this Las Animas County Board of County Commissioners acting in the capacity as the Board of Human Services. Today, September 17, 2024. It is now 1 p.m. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Please rise for an invocation by Commissioner Luis Lopez, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance by Commissioner Tony Haas.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for the opportunity to gather in your name. We ask you for guidance and patience, love and virtue as we do the county's work for the community members of Los Animas County. We thank you for the staff of the Department of Human Services, and we ask you to keep them in your safety, Lord. Embrace them and guide them in making good decisions for the behalf of our community members. In your heavenly name, Lord, we pray. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Roll call, Mr. Aragon.
Commissioner Haas, here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez, I'm here.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Here. Approval of the agenda. Do you have any changes to the agenda, Mr. Aragon?
No, Commissioner, just an added document that's already in there with an update from legal on it. So I'll hand that out during that presentation.
Very good. Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve the agenda this time.
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. And once again, welcome to this meeting. We're going to go to section two, the minutes of August 20th, 2024. The regular meeting minutes. Commissioners, we have had those in front of us. Any questions, any corrections, discussions for Mr. Aragon on this?
Oh, 1 second, Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, never mind. I was here.
Okay.
I thought maybe I was at a front range rail, but it wasn't on my calendar.
So. That's why I'm getting spoiled here. Two in a row. Appreciate it.
Yes. Hearing no other questions, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the meeting minutes of August 20th, 2024.
Second motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you. At this time, we're going to go to section three, public comment. Anybody in the audience and or online that wishes to address this board, you will have 3 minutes. Online or present.
Nobody signed up.
Mr. Lucero, are you sure?
Let's see if anybody signed up for him. Snuck in. Thank you.
Hearing none, we're going to go to the next section four, director's report. Good afternoon, Mr. Aragon.
Good afternoon, commissioners. So the primary update that I have today that I wanted to bring to the board was Ms. Garrison, who was out unfortunately today, and Ms. Nora is here to present on a different program, but Ms. Garrison and Mr. Greg Henry, who's our lead special programs over the child care program, met with state staff yesterday, as a matter of fact, to discuss what the prospect of CCAP looks like, and unfortunately it is not looking well. The ARPA funds have sunsetted as of 25, so there will be no 24, there will be no coverage from those funds at the end of this year, which we have anticipated. We will utilize what excess from our Colorado Works at closeout of next year to cover any overages. But just to give the board kind of an understanding of what we're facing, and I did actually talk to Commissioner Felix Lopez a little bit about this in our meeting, is that during the pandemic, we were... Each CCAP program was identified to admit those who qualified into the program. the statute does not allow us to disenroll any student in any capacity, which we as a county would not want to do. They have to age out of that program. Specifically, we have 85 children in that program as of right now. With the budget cuts and the perspective of 2025 budget coming up, we are looking at only funding about 46 of those 85 positions from the state funding allocation that was provided to us. We were cut, all counties were cut significantly, which leaves us with a gross of about $250,000 in unfunded mandate by the state office. We are working with the state office now. We did put in place a waitlist program. We approved that policy back in 2020, if the board will recall. However, with statute changes, we have to update that policy. So we are working with the state office now to get that modified and addressed. There is a difference between both a waitlist and a freeze. If we waitlist, that means we can continue to gather data to assess the need within the community. If we freeze, we essentially freeze it at that. We take no applications. We just hold until those kids age out. It will be a one in, one out situation, and there are populations that take precedence over our normal applications from clients, which include our TANF program and our child welfare program.
So let me ask you two questions that are really, one is if about 50% of the population that you're referring to is going to be, in a sense, only able to be funded, what are the numbers looking like statewide? And then second, what happens between the two alternatives? If you freeze the program, what is the rest of the state and the rest of the directors?
So to your first question, what does it look like at the state level? It's astronomical.
Sure.
I mean, we are talking millions and millions of dollars statewide out of the 64 counties that county DHSs and county commissioners are going to be holding the invoice and the bill to, with no plan in the future of where that money is coming from. I've spoken to one of our local providers. We also spoke to Jennifer Sanchez McDonald with HULA. She's our local control organization. She was not aware of this situation, which also makes me wonder what the state is actually communicating to these folks, because we were actually meeting with her to look at increasing the FPL, which is basically the rate of admissions. It opens up more slots because we increase the ability to encumber more folks with a slightly higher median income so that they would qualify. This impact will be highly detrimental to the point that, I mean, Cogworthy Learning Center banks on CCAP as of this point. If this goes out, Director Blasey and I have talked about that. He is really concerned that it may actually end up closing that provider. We only have two other providers. We have three in the county. There's a fourth, which is Cog in Walsenburg. We also fund several slots up there. But we have a private provider, which has one, and then we have a school-age program that probably has about 20 kids in it. So realistically, we would be looking at not having any local providers for our youth that would qualify in this program. UPK is an alternative, but my understanding is that statewide, there's been discussion that UPK is not being funded to the level it was promised. And that because of that, a lot of folks are not applying for it because families are being charged. Providers are not recouping. Kids are being pulled out. It's just...
I'm going to be really blunt. I think UPK was an election tactic at the time. It was a huge promise without the depth of funding to carry out this initiative statewide. And so we'll see what's going to happen. But even the UPK window with what you're presenting to us, what is the average age of this group? And I'm sure it's going to vary from county to county. But where are we? I mean, as far as aging now, you're talking 18.
Yeah, well, no. COG just increased their age. And I believe it just came through last month or the month prior to the age of 10.
Very.
So
it was at 7,
wasn't it? It was at 7. Okay. Ms. Monahan at Calgary Learning Center and Director Blasey and I discussed the need to look at increasing that age limit in the future some time ago. In fact, that was even before Ms. Deb Hartman had retired from the COG. The reality now is they've just gotten that approved. So yes, we're going to see kids going to that age of 10, but that also means that kids that are at age 7, 8, 9 have a 2, 3, 4 year time frame before they age out, which means that for 2, 3, 4 years, kids that are at the same age are not going to be able to go in. This also means more families struggling to figure out childcare, to return to the workforce, people not being able to work because now they have to stay at home with their kids. You know, you said this was an election piece. I honestly think this cut to CCAP was also an attempt to defund this program to a point where the state pulls it back and uses that funding towards GPK, if you want my honest opinion.
Yeah.
Because we have been cut at the knees so hard. Right now, we're looking at a $250,000 overage every year in this county for the 85 students that are in there, less the 46 that we can cover under the EBT benefits. That's as of 25. That doesn't mean we won't see a cut in 26, 27, or 28.
So being a COG member for all these years and seeing, you know, this early learning center and our daycares affected over the years, I think it goes to show us how elections matter. We continue electing folks at the state legislature and our governor's office to allow this to continue on. It's unfortunate, but I think it's not going to change until people feel the effects of what they've done. So having said that, the 250,000 decrease or unfunded mandate will either be absorbed by the county or won't. So how do we do that when we have all the other unfunded mandates coming down that they did universally, just like they did this program?
Yeah, and part of the problem was during the pandemic, we were not allowed to utilize the specific criteria for putting those kids in. Any youth that applied by statute went in. When they came out, we talked about that up front, that would create that volume of students in that program. And that's why we wanted to build that waitlist as early as 2020. But when the pandemic hit, waitlists and freezes were no longer allowable. We had to put anyone qualified into that program. And now we have to hold them in that program.
Now, so moving forward, if you freeze it, then that will show so many people, hey, how did this happen? And it alerts them to the horrible legislation that's been occurring at the state level for years.
And we go back to the Colorado Works Program. So by statute, the county is required to fund the TANF programming. So Colorado Works, child care, and child welfare block. When we do not utilize the entire MOE, as in this year, we sold a portion off to save some of the tax dollars back. Any excess we can actually apply to CCAP or to child welfare if there's an overage. In the future, we'll have to. But if the board remembers, the state legislation put a vote out 2 years ago and it passed so that in Colorado Works, there's an automatic 30% increase to the basic cash assistance or the BCA payment over the next 5 years, which means more people that are in that TANF program, Colorado Works, will receive a stipend increase, a cost of living adjustment for 5 years, which means we'll be eating through. We saw $100,000 cut on our allocation from Colorado Works this year. So more work, more clients, less money. So yeah, I agree. When it matters to vote, it does. And what we're voting on needs to be clearly defined to people, and it's not. And so now we're at a precipice that, you know, as a department, we've worked very hard and diligently over the last 4 years, 4.5 years that I've been here, to put money into that reserve. We're going to eat through that reserve in no time. And by statute, when that reserve is gone, then it's on the general fund at the county level to pay that.
8 years ago, we were broke, closed 2 days a week. Coming back around.
And what my concern is in the meeting last week, Assessor Ms. Amato presented how this was kind of at the jump point of 2008 again, and we're right there. So it is scary as to what we're gonna be seeing over the next 3 to 4 years.
And I think right now this whole DHS statewide, beginning with software, you're talking billions of dollars. when you put it all together over the next 4 or 5 years to correct or straighten out a little bit of the curve that we entered prior. Once we got into the pandemic, the expenses increased tremendously, and now we're still operating, if you will, with the same mandates. And as we continue to hear, the software upgrade, is that going to happen? Probably not.
You know, the irony of this is in the 60s and 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s, one particular party, the Democratic Party, were the ones embracing entitlement programs and assistance. And now they're the very party stripping it. How does that work?
I don't know, Commissioner, but I will say this. The downfall is the youth that we serve and the families that we serve. And that's what's going to make it really difficult for
there are real human lives being tackled by decisions.
And it's not just this department.
No, and it's not this county. It's not this county alone. Every county is in the same seat right now. But the reality is that what we call the Big 11, you know, who have a DHS with a fund balance of $27 million, can take a hit like this.
Or 700,000 in reserve.
It's the small and medium-sized counties. It's going to literally bankrupt some of the counties in the future because there will be no funding coming from the state level to support these types of programs. And the reality is during the pandemic, yeah, we increased max allotment on all food benefits. We put people into programs. We were told by federal statute we had to. During that time frame, you can't do that and not expect a cliff effect. And we're at the precipice of the cliff, and the rocks are literally falling out from under our feet right now. So 2025 in our department is going to be a very financially tough year for the department and for the counties across the state. I met with directors last week in Pueblo, and a lot of us have the same position, is that we're all in the same boat. So we are, myself and Deputy Director Fiorenzi will be frantically trying to figure out and adjust and move and do what we can to make sure that we support our local residents as best we can with the staffing we have. We've already had to make some tough decisions for 2025. Some of our vacant positions, we're not refilling. We don't have the work in those areas. There's no need to spend excess costs when we don't need it. So we're able to do that. We are very lucky that the leadership we have is capable of getting that workload in certain programs down to that point. But that also means that 3 or 4 positions that could be funded and supply income to a household, I now have to get rid of.
22 years ago, 21 years ago, Council of Governments Early Learning Center was a pay facility. You had to pay to get into it. Very few were, this program didn't exist. Now that it exists, it's the very reason why we have that service here. I don't know what that's going to do to the Council of Governments and Early Learning Center in the community and daycare.
Yeah.
And not just them. The other 2 or 3 are receiving some funding from that as well.
You're going to see secondary and tertiary effects from this. You're going to see parents coming out of the workforce staying home. So that means unemployment rate goes up. You're going to see more families strapped for cash in a socioeconomically depressed community already, where 2/3 are on governmental assistance of some sort. So now we're looking at adding additional cases to that workload. It's every single program except for child welfare, and that was due to the CWAC vote on the allocation model for the next 3 years. But every single program at DHS took a massive cut this coming year. Our budget is significantly shortfalled from years prior.
State organizations like Dole, you're seeing the same thing.
Yep.
Well, you have some really good news today.
We do here and there. No, it's about being transparent with what we're facing. It's not about being the Debbie Downer at every meeting. I feel like that anymore, but that's the reality. This is what I deal with every day. It's not just how do I keep the 69 staff over there on the 65, since we're not backfilling those positions, but how do I keep those folks employed and maintaining the services that we do with less staff now? But like I said, I've got great leadership in place now, which is cutting back workload because we're being more efficient in the way that we practice. So there's no reason to spend that excess money. But it will still be difficult for all counties across the board. So
sounds like our discussions.
Well, you know, I hate to bring politics in the middle of it, but it's exactly that. You know, the state of Colorado at this point, you know, being a lifelong Democrat myself, it's disheartening to see this being occurred. You know, now that this is being stripped from the very party, like I said, helped create this great programs that helped people that needed a hand up. And here we are stripping it for pet projects for our governor's office and other things that he has going. And we see it because we're neck deep in it. In our legislation, the general public don't see it. We see it every day.
Well, we're barely at the general. I just spoke to Director Poverly in the finance office right before coming up here, because we're in budget season, obviously. You know, our proposed assessed valuation is still up in the air because we just had special session with the property tax piece. I mean, we were looking at Prop HH last year, which was going to do the county in. We were looking at a much larger one under 108. Now 50 passed, but it's not a win for all. It's still going to cut. So even with the mills that the county has, we're still proposing to see, I'm assuming from the assessor's office, additional cuts from that property tax. So even with what we're working at now, it may go down even more.
And just so you guys know, in our conversations with our administration here, we're still going to be short. We was at 800,000, and we talked about moving mills around and stuff, trying to just, you know, with Mrs. Coverley in this discussion, there's nothing set in stone yet. How to manipulate this budget to that budget, to the sheriff's budget, to everybody's budget, so we can balance. We're still going to be short $300,000+ still, even by manipulating this department, yeah, that department, the special half cent public safety tax. You know, we can evaluate that. Mr. Ferenzi, I don't know if you're familiar with the half cent public safety task that is a tax that is dedicated to the district attorney's office. Maybe have that conversation with Mrs. Corberly and Mr. Dorenkamp and Mr. Solano and the new district attorney of possibly squeezing some of that. This is a public safety issue, or, you know, maybe you rob Peter to pay Paul for child protective services or adult protective services, some sort of public aspect of public safety. Or maybe we utilize and manipulate that money from the health department, from our general. We have to be creative right now on how we move forward, very creative on how we manipulate the funds that we do have and be available.
Yeah, and I, you know, again, we've done the same in our budget prep, you know, talking to supervisors and to the deputy directors, mm-hmm, and identifying, okay, do we have the need for this position still, even though it's vacant? And, you know, we're not cutting anyone out, but we're cutting a position out that's vacant because there is no opportunity for it to be funded right now. And honestly, it's I take it as a divine intervention of some sort that,
well, that position cuts into the local economy.
It does. It absolutely does. And, you know, from 2020 till now, you know, when before the PHE ended, and keep in mind, Medicaid PHE just unwound last year. It just finished at the end of the year. So we were still under pandemic level Medicaid until last year. So this whole time we've gone from 2020 till now with giving with no stop. At some point we were going to hit a stop. And then I say the cliff effect with the rocks. Well, at this point, I feel like I'm off the cliff. The rocks are on the side of me and I'm sailing straight down head first. But, you know, we're doing the same. And that's, you know, I had that discussion with Commissioner Felix Lopez about the mill levy. And, you know, this county is, we have to do what we have to stabilize as a county, not just DHS, but across the board, you know. But my concern is what do we do with the $250,000 automatic unfunded mandate now with CCAP? Because it's going to sit there until those kids age out.
Well, and I tell you, right now, the translation of the special session, where is going to be the property tax assessment? What is that going to look like? What are going to be some of the implementable points from the legislation? It's one of the things that we are waiting to see what else is going to impact the county. My thing as an elected official in this county, and I would imagine that the three of us think the same way, going to our constituents and asking to raise the mill levy for the county, it is not the time.
No.
Right now, everything is at its highest that it has been. And we have been really blessed the last few years that,
yeah,
we were able to operate the way we did. But as you said, the more money we threw at this economy, we created our own economy from within.
Yep.
So anyway, we can debate this until 4 months and hopefully not years to come, but thank you for that. Anything else?
Not at this time, commissioners, unless you have other questions. Just know that the state directors or the county directors are at the table with CHSDA, and I believe there was a letter that was sent to CCI recently regarding this. So I would expect that you will see communication from the Directors Association coming. We have some really well-versed folks at the director's level who are CCAP specialists, and so they're really working with CCI to try and see what we can do with the JVC.
Yeah, and you do. I mean, that's one of the things that I really appreciate. DHS at CCI level, I mean, you have some amazing representatives there that give us a lowdown. I mean, and the way it needs to be. So thank you for that. Commissioners, any other questions for Mr. Aragon? All right, we're going to go to Section 6, new business. Consideration of caseload counts and activity by program. And we have a litany of programs in there. Mr. Aragon, do you have any?
Commissioners, I did ask for, and I do apologize, some of our supervisors are, unfortunately, we've had a bug hit the office this week, so some are out ill. We have some joining virtually, but I did ask folks to come, and I don't know, Lori, if you had anything to present. I believe Marcy, who's online, may have some information to present as well, but I do know Ms. Nora had a presentation to give this morning as well, or this afternoon. Did you have anything you wanted to give forward to the board? No.
We'll follow up on a day in the life of Lori. I think that would be
They were challenged yesterday, to say the least.
You know, we did that 7 years ago, Paula, when we sold the ballot measure. We did a day in the life of road and bridge guys, of cooks at the jail, some DHS people. We did it just to sell the ballot measure.
Marcy, did you have anything to present? Are you speaking? We can't hear you.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Sounds like the volume is really low. Do I turn it up on this end?
You were asking. Check the remote control right there. So you point it to the TV on the far right. Nope, you're entered.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm there.
Sounded like she tried to answer. No.
Yeah, I heard something. So, okay. Marcy, unfortunately, we can't hear you, but if you do have something to present, perhaps we can hold that for next meeting. Val, I know you're online. Did you have anything you wanted to add to case counts this week or this month?
No, I do not, Michael.
Okay. All right. Then I'll turn it over to Ms. Nora, who's here to present on behalf of economic security on a specific program that we are also monitoring very closely these days.
We have a couple of programs to make you guys happy that applies for the community. So we have, the first one is a working adults with disabilities. So this program, you must be 16 years and older. You must be employed. You must have a qualifying disability, either Social Security or state disability termination, which means, let's say that you're just almost there, but just not quite there to qualify for Medicaid. So they develop this for people that have disabilities. So what we normally do is we have them fill out a disability app. We send it off to a company that we use, which is ARG, Arbor. So then they determine if you're disabled, depending on, they get all your medical records and they figure it out and they're like, okay, well, you're partially or fully. So they'll give you either a year, 3 years, 10 years. So the good thing is that you can earn up to $11,000 a month for the household and still qualify for full Medicaid. There is a premium that you'd have to pay depending on what your income limit is. But due to COVID, they keep pushing it out so when nobody's had to pay a premium for it. And it helps for people that are just over to qualify for Medicaid because they have to work. And it also, they extended it a couple of years ago over 65. So if you're over 65 and still have to work, then you can qualify for this if you have some sort of a disability. And they'll give it, like I said, it's full Medicaid. And if you have Medicare, Medicare becomes your primary and Medicaid becomes your secondary.
That's great for seniors then.
Well, no, it's for anybody over the age of 16.
Well, anybody, but they have to be qualified with Social Security benefits?
If they have a disability, let's say they're getting SSI or SSDI, then yes, automatically, once they start working, then it puts them into that working adults with disability, which is full Medicaid. But let's say they don't, they're not receiving it, but they do have a disability, then all they got to do is come to us, we'll help them fill out that application, send it off. Now, unfortunately, it usually takes 90 days, but we've seen where it's expanding to like a year.
They have the FCCD program. And for those of you who don't know, it's former county commissioner disability. I'll be entitled to that in about 4 months.
You can apply. Yeah, you can apply. And you don't
have a health issue.
And just to let you guys know, you don't have to like go into a job and get a paycheck. Let's say you have a disability that you're at home. But let's say you babysit or you take your neighbor's dog for a walk and he pays you or you clean homes or whatever, then that's fine too. You just need something in writing saying this person does this for me and I pay him this much a month. That's still working.
So they have to file taxes on any of that income or revenue?
That I don't know.
Okay.
That I don't know. All I know is that for you to qualify for this, yeah.
Awesome.
So this is a really good program.
Do we advertise that in any way? Or how do you, or do you do this with, if somebody comes in that doesn't qualify?
I usually do when they come see me. A lot of clients that have, they're wanting either long-term care or maybe just that they don't qualify and they do have I do offer it to them. They say, okay, you don't qualify for Medicaid, but if you have a medical condition, this is something you might want to think about. So we do offer it. It's just not out there unless you Google it. Okay. And then we also have one for the children. So.
But okay. I want you to put that in there, FCC.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then also we have one for the kids.
They're right behind me. See, that's
okay. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, we encourage people because in a medical, it can be really for people as far as cost. It's the highest for us. So we also have one for the children, which is a Colorado buy-in for children with disabilities. So let's say you have a child that has... a disability, they're not receiving Social Security disability, you try to apply, but they have some sort of a disability, they also can qualify. So the household might be over. So this is good for them because then the child can be on full Medicaid under the child disability as well. So, you know, hopefully, you know, people will listen and they'll take advantage of it because it helps a lot of families not to stress about having to already everyday life, but have to stress about medical bills.
Are you getting quite a few applicants on that?
We do. Yeah, we do. So, and also, it also ties in with whenever long-term care. If a person's wanting to apply for long-term care and they're under the age of 65 and they're not receiving any type of disability, they also have to go through filling out an application for disability as well.
But Social Security is not considered a disability, right?
Well, Social Security is different. You try to go to Security, try to get disability and they'll deny you. This company, what they do is they get a bunch of, I guess, doctors sit around. They read all your medical records. So that's something that they require. And that's what kind of pushes it out. Because when you apply, you have to turn at least 2 years of medical records. And if you haven't established somebody with a, you know, going to a physician, well, it's kind of hard because they get all of that. And then they all review it and they all say, okay, you're fully or partially. But it has nothing to do with Social Security. They're the one. So, but it does help you to be able to get on these programs. Yeah.
Well, thanks. We have a multitude of other programs too for folks who don't necessarily, you know, if they're between the age of 60, is it 60 and 62?
Old age pension.
OAP. Obviously, if they're applying to Social Security and they're in that transition period,
they can receive a monthly stipend through that program up until the age of 62. Once they get onto Social Security, then we are, as a county agency, we are reimbursed for the funding that was put out during that time for that gap. So we do have those types of programs as well for folks who don't qualify for a disability component. These are specifically much more difficult. And what it is the time frame, like she's talking about, the approval time frame has lengthened extensively over the last 5 years to a point where, you know, again, it should be 90 days approval. It's taking up to a year because it depends on how much documentation for the medical is sent, how fast or how quickly the agency, ARG or ARBOR, is getting through those. Last I heard, ARG was approximately about 3 years behind in some paperwork processing. So, again,
that's for the billing?
No, that's for the determination. Mm-hmm.
So yes. The program we get reimbursed for is the state A&D.
And A&D is the one we get reimbursed for. Yes, sorry.
So at that one you can apply before the 60.
Yeah.
You know, but you have to go to Social Security and apply for SSI and SSDI. And some people, because before you would just go and apply for SSI and you're fine. But the state decided to put in a new potential income, so now they have to do both. So it's hard for us because some of the clients will go and only apply for the SSDI, which is actually more money for them, but they also have to have SSI. That's the only way we can get reimbursed if they have SSI. But the old age pension, yeah, from 60 to 62, you can get almost close to $943 a month until you turn 62. And then at that time, it's mandatory that you have to apply for Social Security early retirement.
So when people get like that don't qualify for any of these Medicaid or for their children and stuff now, and the reason I ask is this, I get asked this quite often, what they can do and can they come to Department of Human Services to help pay a medical bill if they qualify and all this stuff. So what I've recommended them to tell the medical facility or the provider, give me the cash rate versus the insurance rate. And then you take that cash rate to assist if you qualify. That way it's a lot less burden to the department.
Well, the thing about it is the state really wants to keep the children on med. Mm-hmm. So when they're over, and that's where the parents don't understand that they have a different income limit than the children do.
Okay. So it's separate from the children.
Yeah, with they have a different income limit. So they start with Magi parent and then they go to Magi. And then if they're over that, then they don't qualify. But the kids will switch over to CHIP Plus. But then they also give them a whole year to put them on transitional so they can find something that's comparable for the family. So,
I just worry about them not having coverage and they get this huge bill and they don't realize that they can ask for the medical facility to give them a direct bill cost versus inflated insurance, mm-hmm. you know, billing.
But we do. When clients come in, we do everything we can to try to
advise
for any programs that we have that can assist them. And unfortunately, sometimes we can't. And it is hard because a lot of them are our elderly clients, and it is hard. But I would like to ask you guys, if you want to do a day in the life of call center for eligibility, you're more than welcome to come by. Yeah, we seem to be getting more and more people applying. It's
hard. And then you're also... You guys have the department there for oversight or fraud, right? You run that.
Yes.
You're working
with used to do fraud, yeah.
Okay,
but
we still have that implemented. And that's the big thing. 8 years ago, we didn't have really a lot of that implemented at the time because there was no money for it. So I'm glad to see that program is doing good and protecting the community members, especially what did I see a report the other day that SNAP would benefit folks from the state of Colorado. We're using benefits all throughout the country and not being yanked off from certain, not from this county, but the big 12 counties up north. And they didn't have people watching that, you know, and cutting that off. That's just another expenditure to our state, federal government, but you know, we're not watching that.
So there's a lot of changes to where we can see that now, especially on our, yeah.
Right, well, I applaud that effort. I really like to see that stay that way. Especially after I'm gone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you guys have any questions?
Okay. Thank you for that information.
Yes, it's very beneficial for our community or for you guys too.
So, a day in the life of the call center. Tell us a little bit more about that, because the more we understand, and I'm actually kind of maybe not knee deep in DHS, but I really understand a lot of the issues that you're going through, especially when it comes to the finance. But the day-to-day phone calls that you're getting, people, they want it now, right?
Yep.
Here.
Yep. So we have people come in and they just turned in their paperwork yesterday and they want it done the next day.
Sure.
You know, or they don't, or they turn it in late, and we try to tell them, you know, it's how they come in, but that's how they get worked, because it's, we have a lot of clients that we service, and it's hard to prioritize someone. I mean, you know, of course, if there's something that we did an error, then of course we will
sure.
fix it. But if it's just coming down the line, we have to, you know, we can't cross others too, but we do, we do our best. But a lot of times, you know, people right now are just more, even if they get like a $5 decrease, they show up at the call center like, why? What happened? Why did I get a $5 decrease? So it's hard because they got used to getting so much during the pandemic.
Yeah. I will address the call center specific question that you asked. We've had a call center forever. When I first came in, what we had were technicians rotating every hour. So a different technician would go in and cover an hour in the call center. What we found was there was inconsistencies in information being given. You know, if they called in the morning and got one technician and then somebody in the afternoon, they would get two different perspectives. And so we have a dedicated call center staff now. Ms. Nora is our lead over intake, which includes that. She's also our QAQC, because that's really where that starts. When we get an application or a redetermination in, are all the documents that are required to be turned in with it turned in? Are there specific things that we need to address with the client before we move forward? And then specifically, if they call the call center or they come in, that the call center agent is capable of looking at what the necessities are, and then we catalog that. We have a master catalog drive between the months of January through March. Our call center had over 6,600 inbound calls in that 3-month period.
So as we're going through this language access committee, I'm on that statewide board. I just hope in a call center, are you having to respond to callers from various language backgrounds?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we have systems in place now. If it's a bilingual for Spanish speaking, Ms. Nora has stood in that capacity, as she's bilingual. We've had other staff. We also, with the board members, adopted a auxiliary service some time ago, where we have translation services for a multitude of languages. We also have an agency that does ASL, American Sign Language Services. We also have an application center on our first floor that is for the visually impaired. So we do have a system set up that if somebody's visually impaired but has some vision, can come in and utilize that system. So we have several auxiliary services that we utilize via contract that we put in place, and we are by state and federal mandate required to have those in place. So, yeah.
See, I'm already exhausted by listening to the report.
It can be for Miss Cindy. Yeah, there's times that I, you know, we have to fill in too. Like if she has to take a day off, so we try to manage the calls and the people that come in. So it sometimes it becomes, you know.
I will say, though, I take pride in this division specifically, especially in intake, because they will see a multitude of clients through the door in the day. They will talk to a multitude of clients on the phone. Cindy is our call center agent. She primarily takes pride in that she gets either all calls returned, any voicemails that she gets during the time that she's in conversation with ongoing calls by end of close of business each day. So whether or not she usually shuts down around, our call center's open till
4:30. Well, we shuts down seeing people at 3:30 to give her that last to do any calls that are sitting in the, even though we have a 24 to 48 hour, she still does them the same day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a big operation.
And then it's hard when she gets walk-ins too. At the same time, she'll get 10, 12 walk-ins at the, right after, you know, and then she still comes back and does the phone calls. Yeah.
Well, thank
you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Any other items on 6A, Mr. Barron? All the accounts case led by activity program? Well, commissioners, I think we can possibly approve these from section item I to section to item 5. If no other questions, I'll entertain a motion.
Move to approve the caseload counts and activity by program June and July, item I through, what is it, item 1 through 5.
Second the motion.
Commissioner House?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. I'm going to go to 6B, consideration for Wooten disagreement 2425. Mr. Aragon.
Commissioner, one that I indicated there would be a updated version. Legal had a change on the original lease that was submitted. The board recalls we went into a lease agreement with them last year. Does legal need a copy of that one? I figured since you had the original draft, you were good. I will point that the only change between the two is under section D under security deposit. The question was that required again? It is not. So we did remove that language. And then if approved, the effective date of contract will be today, September 17th, and I'll get that out by DocuSign as well. We entered into a lease agreement with Fort Wooten last year, specifically for storage. We found that a almost necessary permanent piece with the office space that we have. We have a lot of excess. We are still in the scan project right now. That is to be wrapped up hopefully by end of this calendar year. We have sent a total of, I believe, 620 boxes for scanning out of our department. There are still a multitude of about 250 boxes of closed out or discontinued files that we're still sorting through. We are planning to provide the apartment space that we've occupied for some time back to the county in the back of the courtyard here, so that will no longer be necessary for us to house, and so hopefully maintenance can utilize that space again. But we do plan on maintaining this for storage for quite some time.
So, and then that's, you think 2025, you have, right now you mentioned about 800 altogether boxes. Mm-hmm. What is, as far as the scanning per month, or how are you doing that?
So once this initial, these are backlogged cases that have been volumes 2 through 27 for some cases that have been with us for a long time. What we have to look at is the record schedule specific to the program. So for instance, with Medicaid, it's a 3 plus the current. With long-term, it's a 7 or a 6 plus the 1 year current. Child welfare, there are adoption boxes, or there's no record schedule. We have to retain those forever. They cannot go away, destroyed in any capacity. So we have to have a system to house all that. We did have an internal server built. There's a lot of up in the air right now because the state is still planning to move to what they call a universal platform for all the counties. That universal platform is still 3 years out. There's no guarantee as to what that's going to look like at this point. We are in contact with the company that the state utilized for the scan project, which is RMMI. They have a process called PaperVision, which helps manage this component of the digitized version. Our plan is to utilize that currently and then identify where we land in the 3 years time frame if the state just put the RFP out yesterday, as a matter of fact, for that universal platform build. We're hoping that RMMI is one of the agencies that goes after that platform because they have a deep history of working with Department of Human Services and the file management system that they have. Otero County's been on it for almost 20 years. It's worked well. Pueblo County just moved to that. Crowley County, there are several other counties in the southeast that have moved to that platform. So in-house, though, any documents coming in, we currently, especially in economic security, because they're probably our highest volume, everything is automatically scanned in when it's received. And so we have a dedicated, we call AI, individual application intake, whether it's a redetermin or an app, that individual scans everything, catalogs it, and then sends it to leadership to disseminate out to caseload. We'll look at the same thing for long-term care services. Part of the one thing that we do need in that realm is we have two case aides, but we also need a program coordinator, which is going to be one of the few new positions that we have to put in place with that program to help manage that component. It's a monitoring bridge between economic security and long-term care. that is one of our few programs that's not a direct state allocation. That's our enterprise. It's single entry point formally. So the money that's earned is the money that we receive. The Medicaid drawdown that we're doing for direct billing, which Deputy Director Fiorenzi and his team are doing now, they've gotten us all caught up. It's an immense job, but they've been able to take care of that. Jolene Grillet is our primary biller now. She was trained under, we had to temporarily be Rico, Beatrice Rico, come in to help with that because she's experienced in that. Mm-hmm. She got Jolene into that realm, and so our Medicaid billing is caught up now between March and today. And so with that specific, we are generating a high revenue versus other programs that are allocated specifically. So we'll be able to do that. But that record keeping will be managed in-house with scanners that were purchased under the JAI project. We have three of them in-house. Ms. Eklund's office has one, and we'll potentially look at getting one more for long-term care.
Question, are you splitting the $15,000 lease throughout all the call centers or departments?
Yeah, so realistically, what we're looking at $1,250 a month, if you average it out to the 20% match, we're spending about $250 a month direct out of county pocket for that lease agreement. The rest is coming back from the state, the other $1,000.
Okay. Just wanted that on the record so people understand where it's coming from.
Yeah. Absolutely. Questions on the lease agreement?
Legal?
I have no concerns with conversion. If no other questions, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the Fort Wayne lease agreement for years 24 and 2025.
Second motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. 6E, information only. Core services plan fiscal year 24 and 25. Back to you, sir.
Commissioners, every year we are required by statute based on the allocation provided under the core services for child welfare, required to put together a plan. That plan is in front of you. This does not require a formal vote from the board as it's an allocation component. We just break it apart based on what the state and feds allow us to do so. Therefore, in front of you is that plan, and then upon any questions or concerns, Commissioner Felix Lopez, you should have received a DocuSign option. And so that's why I included it today so that we can get this approved. We were required to update for the new three-year plan. Every 3 years, we have to go through a new format process. And so that was the reason you'll see the first of 3 year on the beginning page.
But this is an agreement with the state. This is just documentation with the state.
Correct.
How the program's going to move forward.
Yeah, it's how we're.
It's not an MOE on this one.
No, there is an 80-20%. That's an automatic that gets approved under the budget.
Okay.
But we have to utilize all of the funding in the core programming. And so there's an 80-20 portion, and then there's a larger portion, which is 100%. That is for in-house administration. So the smaller amount is the 20% match. We have to utilize that and then move to the 100%. With mental health, special economic assistance, and day treatment, other items like that, that is 100% covered by the feds and the state. That is not on this. It is on the plan, but it's not a portion that we are in any capacity required to fund. That's done through service referrals from our child welfare to specific agencies to help cover that.
Has this plan changed since the last one we did?
Just in the funding amount, we saw a cut in core as well, which we anticipated. So we did see a cut in core. So we are administratively, again, adjusting child welfare, moving to the differential response platform. Ms. Tupper has and her team have been able to get our case load substantially down, which gives legal more time to deal with the rest of my department. Unfortunately, but because of that, this is one of the areas where we won't be backfilling two of the positions, a case aide and a caseworker position. We will most likely just retain what we have under the child welfare block.
Okay, but it does require a chairman signature on this. So Pam, have you had any chance to review this? And no concerns? We don't have to sign an action item, so we don't have to vote on it. It's just to,
yeah.
Okay.
All right, we're going to go to Mr. Fiorenz. He's chomping at the bit. It's like, are you going to ask me any questions today? Financial matters. Consideration of financials and bills for July 2024. Back to you, sir.
Great.
Welcome.
Thank you. Commissioners, included in your packet is a summation of all program revenues and expenditures through the month of July, also including tax revenues. I'd like to point out we are currently overspent in county administration, and we plan to cover that overage through incentives generated through the Economic Security Program. We're also projected to be overspent in child support and child welfare, and we also plan on being able to cover those overages through incentives generated by child support. Is that correct?
It'll be the child support will be primarily covered under those incentives, and the incentive funding received, and I know Ms. Eklund's on, I know Ms. Garrison's not, but Ms. Nora's here. These two teams specifically, commissioners, have, when we say worked their fingers to the bone, literally, as in the 4.5 years in prior records, these two departments, specifically these two divisions, brought in the most incentive funds we've ever seen at this county level. Economic Security brought in, on average, between $30,000 and $34,000 every year. This last year, they brought in over $53,000. In incentive funds. We're projected to increase that through our call center and our customer service incentive piece. We only received half of that this year, so we should see that increase as well. So I anticipate in the next year to see over 70,000 in incentives from them. Child support themselves also have increased, and I believe Ms. Eklund, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you're on, but I believe it was over 60,000 in incentive funding. With child support specifically, because there is a 66-34% MOE, it is the highest. So we utilize all of those incentives that are retained to cover those overages for child support. That's specifically where that gets applied.
So between the two overages that you mentioned thus far, what is the amount that you are forecasting as an overexpend? And it does have to be down to, you know, roughly what it
I'm was. Not sure. We're already overexpended by 25% in county administration. I would have to.
Yeah. Okay. That's
get those pictures for you.
That's fine.
But you do have enough in the incentive funds to cover the overage.
Correct. And one of the things that Deputy Director Fiorenzi and I were talking about, and he's absolutely right, was that there are other programs where when we budget to, you know, a lot of DHS will budget to the allocation, which is fine. When we use less allocation, oftentimes the state will look at cutting that allocation. So we try to budget to that allocation and beyond. When we have the ability to offset those MOEs in other areas outside of the TANF funding that we don't utilize all those MOEs, then those excess go before they drop into a fund balance. We apply those over to offset those overages in any capacity so that we're not overspent and having to dip into the fund balance specifically. In 25, however, with the mill cut and with the potential proposition of the property taxes, we're most likely going to be dipping into fund balance in some capacity. There's just no way around it.
So you're not restricted then to have to stay with that department? You can manipulate them?
County admin incentives are the only ones. The only specific MOE that's required is the Colorado Works program. And the reason we sell that off is because whether or not, if we don't utilize the 100% of the MOE that we've matched, we as a county still have to pay that full MOE back to the state for TANF. So when we sell a portion off, that's when we get to retain that portion of our MOE and the other county assumes it.
I couldn't remember if they're restricted or not.
Yeah. Child support incentives are the only ones, though, that are required to stay within that specific program. And because county admin is where the majority of our technicians that do the work from and receive that incentive funding is why we apply it to the county admin side, because that's where the majority of payroll comes from.
Okay. That's the main thing I wanted to point out on the summation page. We've also included something new. Following the single audit, we agreed to provide the board with treasurer's report reconciliations, and this is the first month that we've included those. They're right after the summation page in the packet.
Yep.
We've gone through and matched every item on the treasurer's report to source documents. As you can see here on the reconciliation, the first, it lists the tax revenues. Next is the CDHS settlement. And then it breaks down all the components of the CDHS settlement. Those come from the summary report generated through CFMS. Same with the HCPF settlement. Those are also provided through the summary report and CDHS. And this is the breakdown of how those revenues matter come into the amount that's provided on the treasurer's report. The miscellaneous revenues that follow that are some Social Security payments we have for children that we manage. Also some EBT funding through child support over-the-counter payment type of things. And then in the expense section, we go through all of the credits on the treasurer's report and match up the AP packets that all of those expenditures are from.
And I see you went back to January, this report right here, January 2024, which is, well, thank you for the reconciliation process.
Of course.
Yeah, the SEP went from November, so these were getting categorized. Okay. And balancing back to the treasurer's report?
Yes. And if you look at the treasurer's report, we've included a treasurer's report in the reconciliation. The amounts highlighted in orange on the bottom there, they line up with the total revenues, expenses, and then the beginning and ending balances.
Perfect.
I think that's all I have on those. Do you have any questions? Oh, and also, not all of the source documents that are referenced on the reconciliation are included in the packet, but we're creating a book and also an online file so that any of these documents will be available upon request.
Will that need to, I mean, for the general public or for commissioners? So I'd be cautious with having that available.
So that's probably mostly for the commissioners.
Preparation for audit next year.
Okay.
But if the commissioners would like to review, because the source documents, folks, there, I mean, you're talking 184 pages with this. If we put those source documents, this packet would be about 400 pages.
Yeah. So I'd be cautious that we don't put that out. I mean, if we have an audit every year that they can review. That's for public information.
Okay. Correct.
But I'm glad to, you know, when I saw this in the packet, I figured this was, but having you here explain it and show the balance with the fund balance report from the treasurer's office is really great for us. This is something that we haven't had. This will help us moving forward to see apples match the apples. And this is good.
It'll help your department too. This is great.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Deputy Director, but we talked about, so the summation page on the front, which I've produced to the board for years. He also utilizes the share report specifically. So the reconciliation reports, correct me if I'm wrong, are just the cash that's actually been reimbursed to the department based on administrative activities. On the summation page, that is the total, which would include EBT, which we never see. That's an in and out. So those numbers are not going to coincide directly with the treasurer's cash settlement.
That's correct. In the reconciliations, it's everything that actually are deposits or subtractions from the treasurer's account. The summation page will have some higher figures that include EBT and stuff like that.
And the MOE, our percentage of effort, those 20%, 30% match and stuff like that. And this which won't match up with the treasurer's report because it's an expenditure, not an income.
Yeah, we still book it. We talked to the auditor a little bit about that, but we still book those EBT because they are technically funds that come in and out through the department to the county residents. Some counties don't book that. Some counties only book the MOE portion for the boards. I know Weld County is one of them. I talked to their finance director and they only book the MOE. They don't book the full amount. But I think for smaller, medium-sized counties, it is better to do the 100% booking because then ultimately we can see the actual in and out of revenues that we've earned as administrative, and then those that have gone out directly to the public, because then we can account as an agency as to the impact financially within the community as well. When we look at EBT benefits for food, you know, every dollar circulates six times in the community before it leaves. So when you're looking at putting $10 million out in food stamps, that's essentially a $60 million impact from the county into the businesses here. When you're talking about Medicaid, long-term care have higher rates, regular Medicaid. I ran those numbers not long ago. Again, at six times, it's about $630 million in Medicaid drawdown between long-term care and regular Medicaid services that are done through this county, and that's through the hospital, local providers, dental, vision, anything that's Medicaid specific along with long-term care. And so that's about the department itself between food and med alone have about a $750 million impact on the county every year. So that's why I like to see the full amounts booked in and booked out so we can track that.
And then your balance is $1.52 difference in the pending balance on the treasurer's report, which is pretty darn good.
So let me ask you a question, Deputy Director Lorenzi. On the month of June, on your treasurer's reconciliation, you highlighted some two entries on the miscellaneous revenue portion in green, dark green and light green. One of them, the ADM CMA, April 2024.
We ended up finding those.
Very
good. We didn't fix the highlight.
Okay. So, and by that, just think, so your footnote will be corrected as well.
It will.
Okay, very good. Yeah. And no source found. Okay. So then if you go back.
And then that no source document found, and then to the right of it, that is the source document. We just forgot to
very good that. Okay, and then on the very bottom of your expenses, there is the ADM HICPAF settlement, March 2024. This is basically probably a journal entry settled from April 24.
That's correct.
Okay, very good.
I have a question. Commissioner, those are specific to adjustments made on the Treasurer's Department, not on ours.
Okay.
So, for instance, the admin for March for that settlement came in, but it was not booked at that time, and so it got booked in June.
What was it? Like 262,000 of it or something was booked, and then there was...
That was the reconciliation for the settlement, for the stabilization fund. So that the Treasurer did catch that. We sent a notice to the Treasurer's office that the state had issued $292,000 stabilization for CMAs.
That's what I was going to ask.
May got booked as $262,000. And then in June, the Treasurer's office corrected that and added an additional $30,000. So we just make notation of those. And what the process is Deputy Director Fiorenzi reconciles and then sends all the documentation to me. And then I go through and check the reconciliations to ensure they zero out. And then I sign off if they're correct.
That was me. I was having a moment there probably that got the six upside down. It's funny that it's 30,000 to the pin.
And I want to thank you for anytime you have a deposit in transit that you note that in there, that it may show up on the next reconciliation month. So we appreciate that this new financials and steroids, because reconciliation is one thing that definitely has to be. So thank you both for doing that.
We actually tag teamed it. He did some months, I did some months, because I figured if I need to reconcile,
we were kind of down to the wire trying to figure out
how he's doing it himself. So we built that process together, and the form works really well, that we can zero out each month and verify the amount coming in. It also has led to us identifying where there might be errors and mistakes.
And we've already had a few of those corrected.
Yeah.
Is there anything different you want me to put on the minutes per the new stuff?
I think this could probably be just part of the financials.
Just leave it at
We'll continue month by month to provide those reconciliations as part of the financial settlements. Yeah. And then, of course, commissioners, there's the 100-and-some page share report for your reviewing pleasure when you have time to look at all those numbers.
That's why we need that FCCD program.
Well, then I need the DHS.
D program.
D program. Yeah.
Because you've got to share the summary and the source, and when you have to look at all three of them together, it gets a little convoluted some days. So,
well, thank you. Great conversation. Any more questions on 7A?
And you still have all your hair.
For now.
Hearing no other conversation, I'll entertain a motion on item 7A.
I'd move to approve the financial and bills for July 2024.
Second the motion.
Mr. Haas?
Yes.
Mr. Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Mr. Felix Lopez?
Yes. Thank you. 7B, consideration of payroll for pay dates August 15th and 30th of 2024, and special payroll CYCD August 2nd, 2024. Back to you, sir.
Okay. So payroll for August 15th was $123,059.08. Payroll for August 30th was $121,220.54. I don't have commas on mine, so
just put them to the left.
And the special payroll for CYDC was $3,200 on August 2nd.
So, Commissioner, just to clarify, CYDC is the Colorado Youth Continuum. I am the board chair for CYDC for Los Animas and Huerfano counties. We do on call on behalf of the judicial, and so our child welfare staff do on call after hours for that, and so we are reimbursed by the judicial branch for that payroll specifically, and that payroll is only ran quarterly, so you'll only see this report every quarter.
Oh, okay. Okay. And that's roughly pretty much the same amount that we'll see on a quarterly basis. Okay.
Yep. Going into the weeds, does this program pay the matching taxes? Well, FICO.
Yeah. Yes. So we're reimbursed 100% on that. Okay. Now, our on-call, so in the new handbook, we did establish on-call for adult protective and CPS as part of the regular on-call. That is not part of CYDC on-call. So those staff are reimbursed for that on-call schedule for what the handbook outlines.
I mean, we're splitting hairs with what they're doing to us at the state level. We better really pay attention to all these peanuts. You know, my dad always says, you watch the pennies, the dollars take care of themselves.
That is right.
Right, Lori?
Any other information? Commissioners, any questions? And your budget process coming along?
Yes, we've submitted our preliminary budget to Christy, and we've gone through a couple of revisions. I think we've kind of got it locked in now. And
we were waiting on the final numbers from the audit report in order to finalize the revenues and expenditures. And our director appropriately sent me information. She did indicate today in my passing with her that she was wrapping up our numbers today. And so she should be ready to roll tomorrow. So I believe we're right on target for our normal. And then I did clarify with Ms. Lucero that she will present in the October regular meeting. Both will be at that meeting in case there are any questions. And then in December, per the board's recommendation last year, we will hold a separate in our normal budget meeting for the December budget hearing.
All right. And again, just so you know, Frenzy, this is your first year with us doing this. As commissioners, we evaluate every pot of money and how we need to divide it up very carefully. And elected officials really hate us at times, and so the department heads, because we have really tough choices to do. It's not personal, just trying to balance a budget. So please don't take it personally how we move forward, but sometimes we just have to throw something at the wall, see if it sticks, and if it don't, we manipulate it and move it around, and then at the end it ends up turning out beneficial for the community and for the county.
We'll give you a magnifying glass. Make the number bigger.
It look bigger.
So, anything else, Mr. Aragon?
Nothing on payroll, sir.
So, I want to thank you all, but you know that the report that you have provided to all of us, and I know, Lori, every month, thank you for all the work that you all do. And as the times will be challenging in the next few years to come, just know that you have a Board of County Commissioners that is working hard in any capacity that we can to find a balance and get the resources. And I tell you, I go to the CWAP meetings and those things are hundreds of pages of information, but my concentration is always going to be on the bottom line. What are we doing as counties with the mandates that we have to provide the services? And at the end of the day, somebody has to be the bad guys, and that's going to probably be us. But on the other hand, I know that you all are doing your best to provide the services that the community so much needs. And you know, the politics are always going to be there, the politics of making a promise on a campaign trail. But at the end of the day, the dollars run out, the campaign elects whomever, and the promises goes away. But the clients never do. So that's important. But thank you for all the work that you do. Sir, pass that on to your entire staff, and definitely welcome aboard. I had a few more highlighted. You answered some really awesome questions, but thank you so much for the work that you do.
Sure.
And having no other items on this, sir?
We got to make a motion still for B. Oh. We haven't approved the payroll.
All right. Well, I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve payroll and pay dates for August 15th and 30th, 2024. Special payroll of CYDC, August 2nd, 2024.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes.
And see, that's why we make a good board. We got each other's back.
Absolutely. We go in a small fraction of a tangent, so thank you.
Now I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez.
Yes. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you, everybody.